Pastor Tom has been planning this for a month. His church is quieter than it used to be. People come on Sunday, nod, and go home to their own corners, and he can feel something good slipping away. So tonight, he stands up in the church basement in front of 40 tired faces, and he says it plain, "Let's stop being strangers who share a roof. Let's actually show up for each other again. Rides, meals, a hand when someone's sinking, and it's going well. Heads are nodding." And then a man named Andre, sitting near the back with his arms crossed, says the thing the whole room is quietly thinking. "Pastor, I've done this before. I'm the guy who always shows up. And you know what I got for it? Used up. Everybody had my number when they needed something, and nobody had it the week I needed something. So, no offense. But why would I do that again?" And the room goes still. Now, if you've ever tried to lead people toward anything good, you know that stillness. You made the warm, hopeful ask, and somebody named the fear that was already sitting in every heart in that room. Here's what this episode is about, what Pastor Tom says next. Because that one moment, how a keeper answers the doubt, is the whole thing. Get it wrong, and the good idea dies right there in the basement. Get it right, and 40 people lean in. So let's get it right. Let's name what just happened to Pastor Tom, because it happens to every keeper, every single time. A keeper is just a regular person who decides to help their people give to each other instead of drifting apart. And the moment you stand up and ask people to give, you become the person who has to answer the doubts. That's the job. Not the easy part, the whole job. Because here's the truth nobody warns you about. The doubts are not a sign your idea is bad. The doubts are a sign people are taking it seriously. Nobody argues with a thing they don't care about. Andre's not heckling Tom. Andre is telling Tom exactly where the wound is. And most leaders, the second a doubt shows up, do one of two losing things. They either get defensive and argue the person down, or they get nervous and paper over it with a slogan. "Oh, it'll be different this time, you'll see." Both of those tell Andre the same thing. "This person can't handle my real concern, so I'm out." So the first rule of being a keeper is this. When the doubt comes, you don't duck it, and you don't fight it. You walk straight toward it. Because the person raising the loudest doubt is almost always the person who most wants this to be real. They're just scared to hope. Andre crossed his arms because he's been burned, and a burned person guards the thing they care about most. Your job is to make it safe to put the arms down. Now, here's the gift the books hand you, and most keepers don't even know it's there. Book 2 doesn't sit you down and preach at you. It picks a fight with you, on purpose. It stages the hardest doubts a person can throw at this whole idea and lets them swing as hard as they can. "I don't have the time." "People are takers. They'll bleed me dry. I tried this. It didn't work. I'll get used." And then it doesn't dodge a single one. It answers each one honestly, the slow way, not with a cheery slogan. Why does that matter to you, the keeper? Because it means by the time you're standing in that basement and Andre crosses his arms, you have already heard his exact doubt in its strongest form, and you've already sat with a real answer. You're not caught flat-footed. You're not making something up on the spot. The book argued it through with you first, in private, where it was safe to lose. So you walk into the room unrattle-able. There's an old idea worth borrowing here. You sharpen a knife on a stone, not on a sponge. Easy agreement makes you dull. The doubt is the stone. Book 2 is a whole bag of stones, handed to you before the fight, so that when a real doubt comes at you in real life, you've got an edge instead of a blank stare. The keeper who has wrestled the doubts in private is calm when they show up in public. That calm is contagious. Andre can feel it across the room. This person isn't scared of my question, and that, all by itself, starts to lower the arms. Okay, here is the single most important move a keeper makes, and if you only take one thing from this whole episode, take this. When Andre says, "I got used up," there's a weak, lazy move sitting right there, and almost everybody reaches for it. The weak move is to treat Andre like the problem. To think, quietly, he's just bitter, he's just negative, he needs to soften his heart and try harder. Do not do that. Not only because it's unkind, because it's wrong, and Andre can smell that it's wrong, and the second he smells it, you've lost him and probably three other people in the room. So here's the move instead. You agree with him, out loud. "Andre, you're right. You did get used up. That really happened. And it wasn't your fault. Watch what that does. It takes the wound seriously instead of arguing with it." And then, this is the turn. You name the real culprit, and the real culprit is never the person, it's the shape. Picture Andre with a bucket that's got a hole in the bottom. He's been pouring his time and his heart into that bucket for years, and it's always empty, and he thinks the lesson is, stop giving. Giving is for suckers. But that was never the lesson. The bucket has a hole. He was giving one direction, out, into a thing that only ever took and never sent anything back. Of course it drained him. That's not a character flaw. That's a leak. So you say to Andre the kind, true thing, "You're not wrong, and I am not asking you to do that again. I'm not asking you to be a bucket with a hole. I'm asking us to build something where what you give comes back around to you too." Hear the difference? You didn't tell Andre to feel differently. You told him the problem was never him. It was the shape he was giving inside of. You honored the person, and you blamed the structure. That's the whole turn, and it works because it's true. Now let's take the second doubt, because Andre's isn't the only one in the room. Somewhere a tired mom is thinking the one that stops more people than any other. "This sounds lovely, but I don't have the time. I'm already drowning." And keeper, listen, this is a real doubt. Do not wave it away. She is not lazy, and she is not lying. Her days are genuinely full, so you don't argue with her clock. You change what you're asking her to put on it. Here's the secret most people miss. The giving that builds a real circle is usually tiny. It is almost never adopt a family or run a soup kitchen on Saturdays. It's the 30-second giving. It's texting two neighbors who should know each other and saying, "You two should meet." It's mentioning, when you hear someone needs a crib, that the family on the corner has one in the garage. It's an introduction, a name, a heads up. You're not asking the drowning mom to carry more water. You're asking her to point, to connect two people who can help each other, so the help moves between them and not through her. There's something old and true underneath this, and it's worth one careful mention. People who have spent their lives studying it keep finding the same quiet thing. Folks who regularly help other people tend to live a little longer and feel a little better. The small, steady giving seems to feed the giver, not drain them. Notice, that's the opposite of the bucket. The bucket drains you because it's a leak. The small, two-way kind of giving fills you because what you set in motion comes back. So to the mom who says, "I don't have time," the keeper's honest answer is, "You're right, you don't, and I would never ask you to add a second job. I'm asking for 30 seconds and a good introduction. That's the whole ask. And watch, she can find 30 seconds. Everybody can find 30 seconds. The time doubt was never really about time. It was the fear that you'd ask for everything. Ask for something small and the doubt has nowhere to stand. Now, I have to take the sharpest doubt head on, because if I skip it, you'll know I cheated. And so will Andre. Here it is, and it's a smart one. Fine. But some people really are takers. There's always that one guy who shows up empty-handed every time, eats the food, takes the rides, and never lifts a finger for anybody else. If I open my hand, he's the one who'll bleed me dry. So how is your nice circle not just a free buffet for the laziest person in the room? Good. That's the real fear, and a keeper who can't answer it honestly is just selling. So let's answer it honestly. First, yes, that person exists. I'm not going to insult you by pretending he doesn't. Some people only take, and pretending otherwise is exactly how good people like Andre got used up the first time. So we take the taker seriously. But here's the thing. The doubt gets wrong. It assumes the only choice is the leaky bucket, the one-way pour, where you give and give and just hope it works out. And in that shape, sure, the taker wins, because in a one-way pour, nobody can even tell who's giving back, because nobody's supposed to. The taker hides perfectly in a bucket. Now, listen carefully, because this is where keepers go wrong, even kind ones. The fix is not to start watching people. The fix is not to keep a scorecard, or grade who gives, or quietly test Andre to see if he's a real giver. If you do that, you've poisoned the whole thing. You've turned giving into a job interview, and everyone can feel the eye on them, and a circle full of people being graded is not a circle. It's a panopticon, and it will die faster than the bucket did. We do not give in order to surveil. Ever. That's not our way, and it never will be. So what is the answer? It's quieter, and it's better. In a real circle, open hands passing things around, both ways, you don't have to watch the taker. You just don't have to keep pouring into him. The shape does the work. When giving moves in a ring instead of one direction, the person who only ever reaches in and never sends anything on simply stops getting fed, not because anyone's punishing him, but because there's nothing flowing his way to take. You don't expose him. You don't shame him. You just stop being his private bucket. He's free to start giving any time he likes. The ring is right there. The difference is night and day. And it's the difference between watching people and simply building a shape where one-way taking quietly runs out of fuel. So let's go back to the church basement, where Andre still got his arms crossed and 40 people are waiting to see what kind of leader Tom really is. And let me show you what it looks like when a keeper does this right, because it's not fancy. Tom doesn't have a comeback. He doesn't get defensive. He looks right at Andre and he says slowly, "You're right. You did get used up. And I'm sorry, because that means somewhere along the way, people leaned on you and nobody made sure you got leaned on back. That's a real thing that happened to you, and it wasn't your fault." And he lets that sit. He doesn't rush to the butt. He honors the wound first. Then, gently, "Here's the only thing I'd ask you to notice. Last time, you were one guy holding everybody up, pouring into a bucket with a hole in it. I'm not asking you to be that guy again. I'd never ask that. I'm asking 40 of us to hold each other up, so it's never all on you, and so the week you're the one sinking, 40 people show up for you. You won't be the well. You'll be one of 40 hands." And then Tom does the bravest thing a keeper can do. He says, "And, Andre, I'd actually like the first thing we do for each other to be for you. Because you've given the most and gotten the least, and that's exactly backwards, and I'd like us to start by setting it right. Now, watch the room." That's the moment the arms come down. Not because Tom out-argued Andre. You never win by out-arguing the wound. He came down because Tom agreed with him, blamed the leaky shape instead of the man, asked for 40 hands instead of one, and then offered to fill Andre's hand first. That's the keeper's whole craft in 60 seconds, and every piece of it is honest. Tom didn't trick Andre into giving so he could quietly check whether Andre's a real giver. He offered to give to Andre, first, for free, with no test attached. That's the tell of a real circle versus a fake one. In a real circle, the leader gives first and asks nothing back and means it. All right, keeper, let's turn this on you, because it's easy to talk about Andre and miss the person in the mirror. Here's the quiet truth. The doubts you'll be worst at answering for your people are the ones you've never answered for yourself. So let me ask you three honest ones and actually sit with them. First, which of these doubts is secretly yours? When you imagine standing up and asking people to give, what's the part of you that goes, "Yeah, but"? Is it the time? Is it the fear of being used? Be honest, because the doubt you're avoiding in yourself is the one you'll fumble in the room. Second, where have you been the leaky bucket? Not them, you. Where in your own life have you been pouring one direction into something that only takes, telling yourself that's just what good people do? Because, until you felt the leak yourself, you'll teach this like a theory instead of like someone who's been there. And third, the one that matters most, who is the Andre in your group? The one who gives the most and gets the least, the burned one with their arms crossed, who everyone's a little afraid of. Picture them. You probably just saw a face. Here's the thing. That person is not your obstacle. That person is your first gift. The keeper's move isn't to win them over. It's to give to them first, for nothing, the way Tom did. So the work this week isn't to go convince the skeptics. It's smaller and braver than that. It's to go give one real thing to the most burned out person you serve and ask them for absolutely nothing back. So here's your one thing this week, keeper. And it's a give, not a test, not a survey, not a clever plan to find out who the real givers are. None of that. Just a give. Pick the most burned out person you serve. Your Andre, the one who's given the most and gotten the least. And do one real thing for them, this week, that costs you something and ask them for nothing. Maybe it's the thing only you can connect them to. An introduction that opens a door for them. Maybe it's showing up to carry something heavy so they don't have to. Maybe it's just naming it out loud, to their face. I see how much you carry for everybody, and I don't think anyone's ever carried something back for you. So I'd like to. And then, this is the whole discipline. Ask them for nothing. No, so will you join the group? No quiet hope that they'll owe you one. Nothing. Because the second there's a hook in the gift, they'll feel it. And a burned person can feel a hook from across the room. The gift only does its work when it's free. Here's what you're really doing, and why it's the most important move a keeper makes. You are showing one wounded person, with your hands and not your words, that the shape really is different this time. That here, the giving comes back around, starting with them. You can't argue someone out of a wound, but you can give them out of it. One real gift to your hardest person. No strings, no test. That's the week. And if it feels too small to matter, good. Small and free is exactly the shape of a thing that fills a jar instead of draining a bucket. So that's the keeper's craft for answering the doubts. And it runs through every one of these five books. You don't beat a doubt by arguing it down. You answer it by honoring the person and naming the shape. When they say, "I'll get used," you agree, and you blame the leaky bucket, not them. When they say, "I don't have the time," you ask for 30 seconds, not their life. And when they say, "But some people only take," you tell the truth. Yes, they do. And then you build a shape where one-way taking quietly runs dry, without ever once turning into someone who watches and grades the people they're supposed to be giving to. Because we never, ever give in order to surveil. We give to give. The doubts your people raise aren't the enemy of the work. They're the door into it, and now you know how to walk a frightened person through it. And if part of you is still that arms-crossed Andre in the back of your own head, thinking, "Sure, but it really did burn me last time," good. Bring that with you. It just means you'll answer it for someone else with your whole heart, because you mean it. Next time, we follow this same thread into the next book and look at what happens after the doubts come down, how a keeper turns one willing person into a whole circle that holds itself up. Watched over, as always, by Daisy. I'll see you there.